Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Yours truly of the KKK. I like to express our deepest gratitude at the destruction of the inferior nigger race, and I'm especially pleased to report it's destroying itself without our help. To all you gangs, hoodlums, drug pushers and users, and other worthless niggas killing each other, we'd like to thank y'all for saving us the time, trouble, and legality for the final chapter of ridding y'all off the face of the earth. Your solution to our problem is greatly appreciated, so keep selling us your soul. Thank you.
Thank y'all for tuning in to We Talk Productions, one of the only stations talking about black problems and black solutions. You are listening to The Elephant in the Room, and I'm your host, Shaka Zulu, a.k.a. Jamarian Harris. Today I will be discussing the race for the black child's mind with special guest, Brother Kevin Bobby. I had this conversation with the brother in terms of what should we discuss and what should we talk about on this episode. And one second, I have some technical difficulties. One second. All right. Sorry about that. That was a little technical difficulties. I was talking to the brothers about what should we be discussing for this episode. And he was telling me about the children, because the brother has an organization, KCSSU, here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And, he's very passionate about the children, you know. And so tonight, like I said, tonight's discussion is going to be about the race for the black child's mind. And that reminds me of the saying that Baba Kamal had said here in Raleigh, the professor, the master teacher. He said, the first one to the mind is the winner. The first one to the mind is the winner. And so it's very important that we educate our children and they learn many things about themselves and what's going on in the world, how world economies work, you know, how they're cultured, know about their history, you know. And so I want to start this episode off with some words from Amos Wilson. And so I'm going to play something from him. He's speaking on education.
Many years ago, everywhere you went, the African man, the black man, is on the bottom of the economic, social, and political ladder. Those circumstances have not changed. In many instances, they are getting worse. We will find, if you go to Barnes & Noble and some of the others, numbers of books asking, can the African survive? Our very survival into the next century is in question. I often note that our children looked at the series Star Wars. And I noticed that in the beginning of that series, there were no black people in the movie at all. And I noted that whenever then the European looks into the future, there is not a black man there. They had animals, robots, and everything else, operating rocket ships and so forth, but not a black man was there. Which means then, ladies and gentlemen, those who think that they're in control of creating the future do not see the African man there at all. This means then, ultimately, if we look at the task that our children must perform, that the basic task of the European child is conservative. To conserve and maintain the advantages that the European already has, and to enhance those advantages. So that means they're rearing in their homes, in their communities. That means their education then is basically conservative. Because since they already have the advantage, they seek then to maintain that advantage. When we then look at the African child, we see a very different future. And I've often said then, that future is revolutionary. Given the condition that our people are in today, our education cannot be then conservative. If we are to save our people from starvation, if we are to remove our people from the bottom of economic, political, and social ladders, then we must overturn the current orders of the world.
Anybody keep going up? Hold on 1 second, y'all.
That in and of itself makes it very clear that they cannot receive the same education as the white child. They cannot be reared the same way the white child is reared, because they have very, very different tasks to perform. It is when we recognize then the future task that our children must perform, and when we reflect on that task, we then use those future tasks and knowledge of those future tasks to reorganize our present circumstances, to reorganize the schools, to reorganize our relations one to the other, to reorganize our perception of ourselves, and yea, even to reorganize our history. Because history is alive and history is present. As I pointed out in Newark last week, history is the present and history is the future. In European systems, we have a linear approach to the world, an approach that makes one believe that history is something that is left behind. History is something that can be forgotten. No, ladies and gentlemen, history is never left behind. In the human mind, the history is now. And in the human mind, the history is present. For the future is made of things that were made in the past. Without past, there is no future. In order for us to be in the condition we are in, we must literally be turned backwards as a people. We must be reversed. Because this world can only be ruled in terms of lies. Hey, when you have a minority of people, a 10% of the world's population, whose lands are not inherently wealthy, whose lands have no natural resources, ruling over the other 90%, then that other 90% must be kept out of its mind. That other 90% must exist in a state of deception. That other 90% must live in a reversed situation and in a backward situation. Therefore, that other 90% must accept the lie as truth and the truth as lies. I've said that the major differentiation between Eurocentrically oriented psychology and Afrocentrically oriented psychology under oppression is that it is a political necessity that the black man be out of his mind. It is not merely the result of the interaction you had with your mother or your father. It is not merely the result of the absence of your father in the home, or the absence of role models in your communities, or all of these other things we hear day in and day out. It is not merely the result of that. It is ultimately the result of the need for the European to maintain power and domination. And these things are but an effect of that need. You had 2 Sundays ago a bunch of Negroes trying to explain the disparity situation. Pitiful. They went to Yale. Went to the University of Chicago. The experts that they had what? Set up. And of course, those experts gave them the answers that they wanted to hear. And then they are presented to African people as experts. But if they'd gone to the people themselves, I'm sure they would have got a different set of names and a different set of people. But those people did not appear in that paper. So we get people putting effects as causes to say, oh, it's the absence of a black male model in the neighborhood. But how does the absence of the black male model occur? Why is it necessary for that absence to be there? That is never dealt with and discussed. It never gets around. So you have a bunch of experts discussing secondary situations and minor situations and making them appear to be major. That is why they're teaching at the University of Chicago and Yale. Because those institutions are just as much and more of a part of European domination as any other institution. And yet we say that they give us a good education. And we talk and we feel so good when we send our children there without any African consciousness. They are being sent there to be destroyed.
It's about to end in a second.
We have to then look at the schools because it is in the schools, it is in the colleges and universities that the black man and woman, the black child, the black boy and girl must be taught to be dumb. That is the purpose of the schools. Let us recognize it. If the European can only exist to the extent that we are not in control of our common sense, that we are not in control of our identity, that we are not in control of a shared collective activity level, if the European can only exist and dominate as a result of the fact that we are not in love with ourselves and with our people, if the European can only be in control as a result of the fact that we have not fully developed our technological thinking capacities and the ability to concretize those capacities, then why do you think those abilities and those personality characteristics are going to be taught in European-oriented schools?
And I wanted to play that clip for a very important reason, because Amos Wilson, rest in power, brother, like, if y'all don't know anything about anything, go to that man and listen to that man. He has so many footages of him speaking about education and other problems that pertains to black people. Now, he was speaking on the school system, right? And why it's important for these black children to understand their culture, was to understand their environment. Now, when he was speaking on the education system, I was writing something down, a talking point. And that's, for example, people be like, well, we need to be scientists, and which we do need that. But when it comes to things like that, for example, like, we could have more scientists and things. Well, we don't know, and I learned what I'm about to say through people that was in the college system, in the universities and stuff. And they're telling me that a lot of these black college students that has high aspirations to be scientists and things like that. Not saying that they can't necessarily be it, but the chances are next to slim, because there's a lot of seniority that a lot of these white children have because their parents went to these universities. We'd be lucky if one person in our family went to these universities. You have white folks that have, oh, your mother used to go to this university. I remember she was a Sigma Pi Phi, and your father, he was here. He was an Omega, and, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever white thing that they do. And so they have a lot of seniority. They know people that know people, or they know the people directly, the scientists directly, to where their children go to schools and they do the work and bust their tail, but at the same time, they got a lot of people to open up the door for them, whereas a lot of black children that aspire to be scientists, which they can still be, but it's not going to be like that. It's going to be a lot of roadblocks. So, you know, before I get to the brother, I got one more clip by Jawanza Kanjufu, and he has a book that he has written, and it was called, hold on 1 second. It was called the Conspiracy, Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys. And this book came out around 1987, 88, you know, and it's like a 2 minute clip, 3 minute clip maybe that I want to play. So check out what the brother said. Check out what the brother talking about.
This conspiracy is complex. It goes beyond the NBA. Even schools are in on it. We'll be the first thing you see when you walk into a Cincinnati high school, a large trophy case. And that was even school. Give more glory to their ball players than the scholars. That's it in the earlier workshop. Where the pep rally for the honor. In other words, even school, I can understand the NBA, but even school give more glory to their ball players than this college. This conspiracy goes beyond the NBA. It goes beyond school. Jimmy Jackson is giving you the clue one more time. Is it not possible for a black man to be president? For a white woman to be president? For a black woman to be president? Is the club only reserved for European men? You didn't know that a white boy with a high school diploma makes more money than a white woman, black woman, a black man with a college degree? The motive for the conspiracy is clear. For the question of why is there a conspiracy, the answer is white male supremacy. In other words, white men are not afraid of women, black or white, because women have no power anywhere in this world. The threat to European men will come not from women, it will come from other men. And the best way to destroy black men is to destroy the bullfighter. The motive is white male supremacy. But before you get comfortable blaming somebody else, let me make sure we're clear on a conspiracy. They would always do. You see, you have the active conspirators. And you have the passive conspirator. See, it's like child abuse. They were always two. You have the father who does the beating, so, active. But you have the mother who turns her back, passive. Isn't apathy, indifferent, low expectations, buying hot goods in the black community, isn't that also part of a conspiracy? You have the active and you have the passive. In a conspiracy, there will always be two. Let me now give you the starting line. We'll start with the active one first and then move to the passive. Leading off, batting in the number one position, representing this country, institutional racism.
Batting first is the president.
He bats in the number one position. Batting second, representing the Trilateral Commission, the Fortune 500, big business. David Rockefeller bats number two. Batting third, representing the military complex. You didn't know, black people, 12% of the population, one-third of military, and died 41% of the time in the Vietnam War.
Hey, the chief of staff.
Bats number three. Batting fourth, and I don't mean Marlon Brando. I mean the real godfather. Drugs running rampant in the black community. Please don't deceive yourself. If America is the number one power in the world, they could police their borders and stop the drug traffic. These men and what they represent intentionally want to make sure the black boys never grow up to be men. But remember, they got some help from some of us who really like black boys, who may even have black boys at home, just didn't know any better. And so we bat number 5 through 9. Batting fifth, not all but some mothers who raise their daughter and love their son. Batting six, some female teachers who don't understand that boys have different learning styles than girls. Batting seven, representing the media in this country, shows like Gary Coleman and Webster. Shows that make me sick. Shows that illustrate that black men can...
You know, and that's just what I – those are the clips I wanted to play. You know, that's the brother, Jawanza Kanjufu. He has a book called Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys. You know, and so, Jamari, you can go ahead and press the caller button. I'm going to go ahead and get to the Did you press it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Brother Asar, if you on the line, brother, can you introduce yourself?
One second.
Yeah, brother Asar, if you on the line, can you introduce yourself?
Can you hear me, brother Shock?
I can hear you.
All
I can hear you.
You can hear me, Brother Shaka?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I'm ready, brother.
Can you introduce yourself and just explain a little bit about yourself and what you do and why you do it?
Peace, family. I'm Brother Saul, also known as Kevin Bobbitt. I'm the founding director of KCSSU. That stands for Comedic Culture, Science, and System of Unity. Our mission is basically to help raise the consciousness of our brothers and sisters in our communities, basically, and to be an influence and a positive force throughout the planet for every black man and woman and child that's on this planet. Our main focus is African liberation and independence for every black man, woman, and child, every black family, for us to have every opportunity that that is afforded to us, for us to basically stand up as a community and fight for our independence, come together, understand from a world perspective what we have to do as adults, as black men and women, to educate our children so that they can grow up and be world leaders. I think that needs to be one of the focuses. And so basically what we do is we have a rites of passage program that Brother Shaka, he's a big part of it. And also, family, what I would like to do is I would like to commend and congratulate Brother Shaka for all the hard work that he's been doing with his radio show and reaching out and just trying to help elevate, you know, brothers and sisters to the best of his ability. Shaka, as everybody knows, is a real great researcher, and he is an award-winning author for his book, The Dark Side of American Education. So before I move forward with KCSSU, I would just like to applaud the brother and, you know, keep encouraging him to keep doing the great things that he's doing to help elevate our community, our young and old alike. Now, I write the passage program that we are doing. We work with boys from the ages of 8 to 17, but that cutoff age is about 15. We haven't had too many 16 and 17 years old be interested. But our main focus is to make sure that we give our children the right education from an African-centered perspective, that they understand that our root, the root of our existence is, of course, the Creator, Amen, Asar, Ra, but it's also our ancestors and our going back to the motherland. And this is from a physical perspective when we talk about the geography of the world, when we're talking about Africa. But in comedic spirituality, we know that we're talking about as above, so below. So we're not just talking about the physical earth. We're talking about going to the deepest depths of the blackness, the darkness of our very existence. So what we want to do is get the children to understand our identification, which is the most important thing, to understand that we are of African descent, that we are from the motherland, that we are from Africa.
Exactly. And so I just want to get into why we do what we do. Why tell the brothers and sisters a little about yourself in terms of like when you was in the streets and how you come back and you could tell the children about what you seen, because experience is the best teacher, and how you took that from your experience and you know went to jail or whatever, and how you turned that into a positive.
Sure. I definitely will, Brother Shaka. I was sentenced to 120 months in federal prison, 10 years for possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. And while I was in there, basically, it was in 2007, the brother told me, he said, why don't you start, you know, doing something to help yourself, studying things of that nature. So he pointed me to a book, The Miseducation of the Negro by Carter G. Woodson. And when I read that book, it was a total change in the way I looked at the world. And I said I had to push my energy and to make sure I develop myself so that when I came home, I could try my best to do what I can to organize and help our youth to understand that we don't have to go down the wrong path. And the best way to do that is by letting our children understand our glorious history, our culture, our heritage, and the importance of having strength within yourself having knowledge, loyalty, and basically living by Maya, which is the comedic principles of divine love, peace, unity, order, balance, harmony, reciprocity, truth, righteousness, and justice. And I think these things are important once we start to learn the principles of our ancestors, because the one thing we ask the boys is, and this is a basic premise that let people understand the importance of going to the essence of who you are, and that is, what is the strongest part of a tree? And all the children always say the root. So when we go to our root, which is Africa, and then that's when we start to uncover the secrets of who we are, and that's when we start to strengthen ourselves. So once I started studying while I was in prison, I put together a business plan. I put together the business plan. I came home in 2013, and once I came home, we went straight to work. So that's how, you know, I was out in the streets. I was hustling. I was using drugs. I was doing everything that was negative, and I will never forget while I was locked up and I was in prison and I was studying. At this time, I was in the Nation of Islam, and I was reading when Winnie Mandela had went to the mosque where the minister Louis Farrakhan was, and she gave a speech, and they had it in the transcript, where she said, always fight white supremacy. She said, don't never stop. Fight it with every ounce of fiber that you have in your body. And these, to me, are divine instructions from Mother Africa. And we have to understand that when we receive instructions, that they have to be divine. It just can't be because we want to do it. So when we see a woman of her stature, magnitude, and may she rest in glory, that what she stood for in fighting for the liberation and the independence of her brothers and sisters in Africa, we have to take that serious. And so that's always been a big influence for me, her, and many other brothers and sisters who stood up and they fought, ones we've heard of and ones who we haven't heard of. And my main focus and our focus as an organization is unity. Because once we understand the importance of coming together, and me and Brother Shaka, we build on this all the time, not based on religion, but based on the things that we have in common so that we can come together and form a strong enough ties where we can hold our own at the world table with all other nations, and so that we can, you know, fight for what we really fight for, which is the liberation and independence of our people, so that we can have world peace. Because until the black man, woman, and child raise up, there's not going to be no peace because the earth is in unbalanced.
Exactly. And so what I want to say real quick is the fact the brother has a program called the Rites of – he has something in his program called the Rites of Passage. And it's just rearing mainly boys that we teach because we're men. And it's just rearing boys in the correct way to become men, boys to men, and what to expect, what values, and what they could bring back to their communities and how important it is to know history. And the Rites of Passage is an African traditional system. And, you know, a lot of people get turned off with the word African. And me and brother Kevin Bobbitt, we was in a meeting one day, and we were talking about an African-centered curriculum. But so when we started to explain the curriculum, we was like, oh, yeah, the African-centered curriculum is going to be such and such. And before we can explain it, the black lady stopped us and was like, oh, we not African. It's named after a white man. And so me knowing what I know that it's not named after a white man. And so I asked her what year. So neither here nor there, but my point is we suffer from self-hatred so much so we want to be Moors. We want to be all types of every other thing, the black Asiatics, and we don't want to be ourselves. And that's the importance of the rites of passage with these children, because I remember when I was young, I had older brothers like brother Kevin Bobbitt and myself that I look back at, I'd be like, dang, they really cared about me, you know? And so what I'm saying, brother, can you explain about the rites of passage and the incarceration and what they have planned for our young brothers?
Hello, Shaka?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Speak on the right passage, brother?
Yeah.
Yes, the rites of passage it consists of jagnas. It's around 10 of us jagnas, and a jagna is because we don't like to use the word mentor because of where it comes from and what it implies. So we use jagna title. It's an African title of the.
Tell them what a mentor is for the people that don't know, brother Asar.
Thank you, Shaka. Basically, what a mentor is, it was dealing with a king in Greece and his advisor, which was his assistant, and he was mentoring the king's son. So when he went away, and the mentoring became a physical relationship with his assistant and his son. So it's like when you got a mentor and a mentee, it's a one-on-one relationship between an adult male and a boy. And you know when things that happen, that's when all kinds of scandals start to take place. So this same concept they bring and they use it today, and they say he's mentoring him. He's working with him one-on-one. And that's why it's so important for us to understand that we just can't let anybody come and knock on our door and take our son somewhere and saying that it's mentoring. You got to know who it is that
yeah.
you're working with. You can't trust every
yeah.
faith that coming to you without knowing their character and really knowing their background and really knowing
mm-hmm.
their heart. So basically, we don't want to even put out that type of negative connotation with our children. So we teach them that we're their jagnas, which is a title of distinction for a black man and woman of character, one who teaches the youth, protects their community, teaches their culture, and basically provides guidance for the youth and, their peers and things of that nature. And so we're the jagnas, and the young brothers are the initiates. We call them Simba. And the Simba is everybody know, like from the Lion King, is a young lion. So basically what
yeah.
we're trying to do is help the young brothers to understand the transition from being a young African boy to being a strong African warrior, a strong man that protects his women, protects his children, protects his culture, bonds with other
yes.
black men, become scientists so that we can basically build a nation for all black people throughout the planet.
Okay. And so what's the importance? The importance of children knowing their history, these black children knowing their culture, knowing their history, and the things that we bring to the table, that you bring to the table, brother?
Sure. Culture is a foundation. Dr. Amos Wilson, who I love with all my heart for all the great works that he's done, he has an extensive part in his book on culture and and that's a great book if any of y'all ever want to
yeah.
have a fantastic study. The Blueprint for Black Power. And in there where he talks about culture basically is a guy, is things that we do as a people that we have in common. But what we have to understand is that what our ancestors provided was high culture. And this high culture was based off of a spiritual system, that the foundation being the black man, woman, and child. The family structure. That's the
mm-hmm.
thing we have to understand is that that's our spiritual foundation, is the family. So when we understand our true culture and our history that goes along with our culture, and then that's when we start to understand the power that we have within us to overcome the obstacles and the challenges that are put in place intentionally to help us, to keep us from recognizing who we are as a people. So the importance of the Rites of Passage program is to make sure that we give these brothers the proper guidance, teach them our culture, teach them our history, teach them the things that they need to do. One of the main things, that they use on us in the educational system is they provide the information that they want to feed us to go into our brain, which is a computer. So they'll say, if you can read this and if you can understand this, you get an A, you smart. But what you're learning is what they want you to learn. But when you teach the children
exactly.
what they need to know for their growth and their development from an individual, family, community, and nation perspective, and then that's when they understand the importance of us coming together in unity, working together, and that we can do great things just as our ancestors did great things. And that's where they left the monuments like the Herm Acket, which many call the Sphinx, and the Great Pyramids, to show us the royalty that we come from, the legacy that we come through, and basically
yep.
that we have the power to build just as our ancestors built.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And so just reiterating on something that I have done, I wrote a book, The Dark Side of America's School System, and I say that because me and the brother, we're very serious about education. But the school system that our children go to is a deducation. And I like I tell people, there's nothing wrong with the school system. The school system does everything it was created to do because it was meant to dumb you down. It was meant to do what it does, the school-to-prison pipeline. The judicial system, they talk about reforming the system. But how are you going to reform something that's working like a well-oiled machine? It was meant to lock people up, people of color, mainly black people. And so what me and the brother bring to the table, I remember, you know, when I was in the street, and I used to go to his meetings, and I used to catch the city bus. I used to catch the city bus here in Raleigh to his meetings and things. And him, they'll pay for some other brothers and sisters to come up to talk to us and things about education, about the black love and stuff like that. And then we'll go back down to where the brothers and sisters is at, you know. And so I never experienced things like that. And so that's why when the elder that we know here in Raleigh, he says the first one to the mind is the winner. That's very true, because it could be somebody positive that gets to the child first. Because I've seen children that say curse words, and it's grown folks that be laughing at it. They think it's all cute. And then that child, they grow up, you see them 5, 10, 15, 20 years later, and you see how much of a distraught personality that child that turned to adult has. And so, you know, me and the brother talk about things like that all the time. So, brother, can you speak on that, some of that?
Well, before I speak on that, Shaka, I want to finish up on the history aspect of things, which is so important, because it's like, you know, and you speak on this a lot, too, and you talk about we don't even know recent history. You know what I mean? And basically what that
does, it
cripples us, because we really don't have no compass to show us in which direction to go, because we don't even know where we came from. So, you know, what we try to do basically is try to take the boys back, you know, Sankofa, look back, you know, and remember what our ancestors did, but at the same time understand the importance of applying it today and moving forward.
Exactly.
Because we have to understand as Africans that we always have the ability to create. So when we see everything that our ancestors created and the history of the royalty that we come from, our heritage, we understand that this goes back over 20, 30, 40,000 years. So basically,
and it won't just back in the day. People be saying that's just back in the day. It won't just back in the day.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. So when we look at how long, basically, in a sense, that we've been in this condition since white supremacy basically came into existence thousands of years ago, that's just a short time as compared to when we basically was on the throne at the planet Earth. So we're here now today to understand what has taken place and basically to set ourselves up. And when I say set ourselves up, I'm talking about our future generations to come,
yeah,
so that we can return back to where we were. That's why history is so important. Now, what was the second part of the question that you were asking, Brother Shaka?
When I was going in about when I was building on what I was saying, and I was asking you about what did you have to say about what I was saying? Say what?
I said, what were you talking about, bro?
I was just going in just how it's important about these black children to know what's going on, to know their history, and how it's meant for us to fail, how things are set up against us. And a lot of people keep talking about that African stuff that was back in the day. And but then you were saying we don't even know recent history. And we don't know. So I was telling you to go in, the recent history. What you were saying, what I was talking about.
Yes, the recent history is really vital, basically. I'm talking about even from the recent history of when President Barack Obama was in office. Always when you're talking about to the 90s and the laws with President Clinton and before him, Bush and Reagan, and how all the basically the laws that they came up with fighting crime and the war on drugs, which was basically code words for letting black men up. It was attack on young black men and black men to get us off the street. So when we start to understand that recent history, the laws that have been passed and stuff like that, we understand it when we understand the different institutions like the pharmaceutical, when you're talking about the medical and all that, basically all these psychotropic drugs that they're putting our children on, and how the educational system is feeding our children based on their economic status, free lunch and things of that nature, to these counselors and psychiatrists and therapists, and putting them on medicine basically to mess up the mind, because they know down the road by the time they get to the 8th or 9th grade, they're going to be ready to drop out. And they know once they drop out, likely than not, they're going to turn to crime, and that's why all these prisons are being built. So basically, it's every component of government and working together and targeting our young men.
And what's so crazy about that, real quick, brother, is I've seen, we talk about everything. And so I've seen parents that pimp their children in terms of for a check. And either to tell them to act like they crazy, or either I've heard people that I know from like a few years back that I haven't seen in a minute, and a lady told me how her older brother now, he's like in his early 50s, like he's crazy out of his mind, but he was never crazy before. And because the mom had put him got a check for him, and the doctors made sure he was taking his medicine, because, they could take his urine test and blood, they could tell if he's taking it. Or whatever. And so people pimp their children. And the reason why I'm saying that is because we have been traumatized so bad. I see so many parents looking at crazy things on television with their children. I see the movies when I walk in certain people's house. I see the parents watching crazy movies I would never think about letting my children watch. But the things that I would never think about letting my children watch, I was shown that when I was a child. And so And so when you were talking about the drug, how I always talk about how Ronald K. Siegel, and Jolion West, Dr. Jolion West created crack cocaine as we know it today in 1971. And the white dude bragging about it. He's bragging about it. If anybody listening to this footage, write Ronald Siegel down. Write Ronald K. Siegel name down. He's a pharmacologist and a neuroscientist. They tested crack cocaine on monkeys. He's bragging about it. I got other, and that's a straight source for it. They came out with, so when you understand how they created this stuff, and then they make crack laws for these things, they take our dads away, and then the black children grow up messed up because the father ain't home, and they get a mother to benefit. So can you just, speak to that a little bit, brother?
Yes, you talking about the crack with Dr. Siegel?
Yeah.
Now, what was the question again?
Is this how they put us in traps and how they trap us to where you see these? I seen a little young brother the other day with some sagging pants, and I asked him. I pulled to the side. I asked him how old he was, and he was like, "I'm 17." I said, "Man, I said if your pants could talk, it would tell me that I don't know anything and I'm not a threat to anyone except for myself. If your parents could talk, it was,
That's the behavior that our oppressors, our enemies, are looking for. They trying to create a certain young black male, and I say male because like Dr. Juwanza Kanjufu said, the the conspiracy to destroy black boys. So because
exactly.
They know if you destroy them while they're a boy, that they won't grow up to be a productive black man. So when they see certain behaviors, which basically they try to create through media, through music, through television, through all the different entertainment, social media, basically what's trending and things of that nature. They want to put us in a certain mindset, and it's a mindset that basically becomes contagious, and they're able to track that mindset based on certain characteristics of our young men, like the way they dress, are they sagging, basically how they wear their hair. Even though we know all these things, oftentimes they hit the mark when they stereotype, because and that's what they target, and that's what they try to create throughout the entertainment industry of our brilliant young brothers and sisters who basically get up there and sometimes shamelessly do things that's against their very nature, against their own brothers and sisters, against their community, and against us as a people, as far as the degradation that they push out and the energy that becomes a phenomenon throughout our communities, and it's a negative phenomenon. Just like when you talk about the gangs and things of that nature, basically the way it just blew up because it became the thing to do. And then 20 years later, it becomes not a thing to do, but it's always been here to a 15-year-old child. Ever since they've been on this planet, that's all they know. So now it really becomes a natural thing where older brothers like myself and you, we won't look at it like that.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, look, I want to read this quote from John Henry Clark right quick, brother. He said, powerful people cannot afford to educate the people that they oppress. Because once you are truly educated, you will not ask for power. You will take it. Whoever is in control of the hell in your life is your devil. Racists will always call you a racist when you identify their racism. That's John Henry Clark. You know, that's powerful. That's powerful, man. And, you know, and so when I look at these children, when I was young, people say, your generation ain't like my generation. Y'all worse. And it gradually gets to that point, and then you see that there's no connection with the young generation and the elders. Like, there's no connection. There's a detachment between the younger generation, the millennials that was born around 98, 2000. These young generation children, they don't have no relationship with the elders, and a lot of them disrespect. And also, it's a lot of the elders' fault. You know, I live in a neighborhood where most of us don't even speak to each other. You know, like, you do what you do, I do what I do, but our children play together. But most of us, you can't have a community without having unity, you know. And so that's what we practice, that's what we preach. And we not brothers that just talk about things and, well, what you going to do about it? We actually do our own thing and we do things about it. And, you know, this information needs to get out to as many people as possible, you know. And so, but Brother Asar, can you tell the people how to get in contact with you or and your information number, your number or whatever, if anybody want to donate anything to your organization?
Yes, Kevin Bobby, Brother Asar. Our organization is KCSSU. Our email address is kcssunity@gmail.com. That's kcssunity@gmail.com. My phone number is 919-825-6643, and I'm the founding director of KCSSU. And feel free to call me because we are organization, community-based organization, which are all about the people. Not only do we work with children, but we also assist families with food through giving them food vouchers so that they can put groceries in their house and things of that nature. So we're very community-based, community-oriented. We love people who want to get involved and help and volunteer and things of that nature. So feel free to call me, and thank you. And thank you, Brother Shocker, for inviting me on your show.
You're welcome, brother. And I have a few minutes left, and I want to go out on. I like this saying. I love this saying, and the saying is Ubuntu. And Ubuntu is an Eastern Bantu African word, and it basically means one is all and all is one, but at the same time, let's come together. And it basically, you know, you had the story of it is you had a white anthropologist. A white anthropologist is a person, or he was white, but an anthropologist is a person that studied people's cultures. And so there was a white anthropologist that went in the Congo studying the people's cultures and things like that. And so he got the children to play a game. And he told the black children, he took a basket of fruit and set it by the tree. And he said, whoever the first person to get to the tree, they grab the basket of fruit, wins the basket of fruit, and you get to eat it by yourself. Mind you, that represents the white mindset. I can have it to myself, I won. So the children, instead of them running to the tree, these poor malnutrition children, because there's a point where I'm going with this, that represents the African spiritual way that we naturally are, no matter what we believe in, because we love every damn body, and a lot of times we don't need to. And so the black African children, they decided to run to the tree together instead of racing to get there, and they ran holding hands. The one brother grabbed the fruit, ran back, and they sat down and sat in a circle. And they began to share the fruit amongst each other. And so the white anthropologist asked the black child that grabbed the fruit himself, and he said, why didn't you eat this by yourself? You won. And the black African brother said, Ubuntu. And he asked, what does that mean? And it was translated into, how can one be happy when everyone else is sad? You know, that's some real talk. Black folks, we're the only group of people at the poker table with Uno cards. Every time it's our turn, draw four, skip, and reverse, and we could change it, and we are going to change it. And it starts with brothers like Brother Asar, a.k.a. Kevin Bobby, and brothers like me. You know, so I'm going to take us out with Amos Wilson. Amos Wilson going to take us out tonight.
It doesn't make any sense. European is not going to teach his enemy to overthrow him. And yet some of us think that that will be the case. There is hardly any African in the world that has ever given a European education. You know, we hear some people talk about, well, that he has a white mind, or he thinks like white folks. Black people are not taught to think like white folks. You can sit in the white university as long as you want to. You'll never be taught to think like a white man. You can even learn the same thing in terms of course content as the white boy and girl, the white student. You can learn it even better. You can come out summa cum laude, and you still have not received a white education. No, sir, you get a Negro education no matter where you go. I wouldn't complain. I often tell people, you know, who thinks more like a white man, if you want to use those terms, I put those in parentheses. A barakah. Yes. How do we say that? Because, you see, if you're taught to think like a white man, like white people, you want your own nation. That's where white people are. You own your own neighborhood. That's what the white folks think. You want to control your own economy. That's the way white folk think. You want to have your own army. That's the way white folk think, ladies and gentlemen. These people going to these colleges don't think like white folks. They don't come out determined to control their destiny. They don't come out determined to create their own nations and places in the world. They don't come out determined to control military strength and economic strength and other strength. They are coming out the same way their slave great grandparents came out. That is to be servants and to be highly educated servants. That is why a Farrakhan frightens them, because they see themselves in a Farrakhan who says, I don't want to sleep with your women. I don't want to marry your women. I don't want to live among you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. You're dirty, rotten, and repressed as a people. You represent a destructive force in the world.